On Tech News Today, Facebook is launching a social network for professionals, so get ready for cat photos from your boss. Plus, France wants to censor the internet worldwide. Silicon Valley wants Congress to get the NSA under control. And an artificial intelligence computer proves it can teach an old magician new tricks. It's all coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, November 17th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter TNT. And by Citrix GoToAssist. GoToAssist offers a secure cloud-based solution for IT and customer support professionals to provide live and unattended remote support to their employees and customers working from any computer or mobile device. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToAssist.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, and good morning to you, Anthony Nielsen.
Morning,
what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I hope you had a great weekend. I certainly did.
I did.
Stuffed my face, pigged out all weekend.
Excellent.
Yeah, so it's always a good sign. And we also have with us this morning, Lindsay Turrentine. Welcome to you, Lindsay Turrentine.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
How are you doing? Now, Lindsay, Nokia teased a new hardware product today. They tweeted a picture of a black box that looks exactly like an Apple TV, but it had a logo, a Nokia logo on top. The photo had the words, "We're up to something." Sounds a little nefarious. And along with tomorrow's date. So apparently they're going to announce a square hockey puck tomorrow. What do you think this is going to be?
You know, who knows? But it looks like it's probably a streaming device. And there are a lot of these out there right now. Yeah. So they'd have to work pretty hard to set themselves apart, honestly.
Yeah. And the truth is that Nokia is actually really a great company for technology generally. They're actually a lot more creative and have more innovation than they're often given credit for. We know this isn't a phone. That's for sure, because they're contractually obligated to not make any phones or sell any phones until, what is it, 2016 or something like that. So it's not a super ugly phone. It could be just yet another, I think you're probably right, it's yet another streaming box for the TV. And so, kind of boring, but it's good to see them back in the hardware business.
It could be something that is better for Europe than a lot of the streaming boxes that exist now, which I think Europe probably really wants and needs, honestly. I mean, I have no idea if that's what it is, but I think that would make some sense.
Yep, we're going to find out tomorrow, so we don't have long to wait. Well, let's get into the news. Facebook is turning pro. The social network company is building another social network for professionals to use called Facebook at Work, according to an exclusive by Hannah Kuchler in the Financial Times. Hannah joins us now. Welcome to you, Hannah.
Oh, thank you. Welcome.
So why would this be an entirely separate site with separate apps or a walled-off area on Facebook.com?
So it will look very like Facebook. You know, it will have a news feed, it will have profiles, it will have chat. They're not going to abandon the blue color soon or anything, but it will be a separate identity. So you won't have to, you know, share your holiday photos with your boss or whatever. Now, whether or not that means that it's a completely separate experience on desktop, I don't know yet. I would imagine, especially on mobile, it will be separate because obviously they've been pushing very hard this multi-app strategy, which is to get as much space on the screen of a mobile phone as possible. And this would be another way to do it.
Hannah, do you think this will allow, this is a way to get, for Facebook to get more people using Facebook at work, meaning making it a little bit more admissible to have Facebook running? And do you think that that the two apps or sections will be really sort of knit together or kept very separately to help businesses feel more comfortable?
I think they'll have to be reasonably separate, but for both business and employees to feel comfortable. You know, as I said, people don't want their boss seeing everything they post, their political rants or whatever on Facebook. But it also for businesses, it's going to have to be extra secure, extra private. You know, people, they're probably going to have to treat the data used by it very differently. At the moment, you know, everything we do on Facebook is, you know, collected and fed to advertisers. And I don't think many businesses are going to be super happy about that.
Hannah, your exclusive launched a gazillion speculative pieces and pickup articles talking about and making the point that LinkedIn is trying to be a social network, among other things. They have about 300 million users, and Facebook has 300 million users, plus a billion. So they have a lot more users. Yeah. And it seems like, oh, poor LinkedIn, they're in trouble now because the big gorilla is getting into their business. But I really don't think that's entirely accurate because, I mean, you figure that LinkedIn users are going to be professionals. They're going to be people who are adults with jobs and careers, who are working on those careers and so on. Whereas Facebook has, you know, lots of people who are not business people. They have a lot of teenagers who don't have jobs. They have lots of multiple accounts. A lot of that big 1.35 billion figure is a lot of fluff when it comes to people who might use it as a business thing. And when you combine that with the fact that I just have a gut feeling that people don't want to use Facebook for business. You know, I don't think companies, I don't think Fortune 500 companies are going to be that excited to be using Facebook for this purpose when there are so many special purpose social networks like LinkedIn, for example. And the other point is that LinkedIn pretty much failed as a business social network. So do you think that Facebook could actually succeed with this idea?
Ooh,
having loaded the question with like...
I mean, I think that it's too narrow to see this as only a competitor to LinkedIn because... You know, if you're talking about document collaboration, for example, that's much more of a competitor to a Google Drive or Microsoft integrating Yammer into Office 365 or something like that. In terms of LinkedIn's business, I know I'm not going to forecast its death straight away because, you know, people like to have a place where they can find another job. And maybe Facebook isn't that. But LinkedIn at the moment doesn't play that much of a role within people's daily workflow. It is a place they go to find a job or to make contacts with something specifically, but it's not the place they go to, you know, write a proposal with their colleagues.
Now, we know that Facebook is actually very compelling to brands as sort of, you know, a platform for brands to reach lots of different people and perhaps maybe more successful for driving engagement than something like Twitter. Do you think there's any potential for Facebook planning to use that success and that inroad with different brands to say like, hey, you're collaborating here on Facebook and there's an easy way for what you're making or what you're talking about to be pushed out to all of your followers?
You mean to integrate the process of designing something with the process of marketing it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Potentially, definitely. I mean, you know, in some ways it is already a kind of customer relationship tool because people use it to, you know, brands use it to communicate about, you know, missed flights and things like that, as well as to just simply promote themselves. I don't think that's necessarily going to be their first stop, but I could potentially see it in the future.
Facebook is beginning to remind me of Amazon because, you know, a company starts out with a very narrow purpose. In Amazon's case, of course, they've started out selling books, then they started out selling everything, and now they got flying drones and TV boxes and phones and all kinds of stuff. And Facebook keeps surprising us with all, some of these businesses it's going to get into. And one of these, one aspect of this, I think, is kind of shocking, which is you said that they're going to, in a way, compete with Google Drive in the sense that they may allow document sharing. And if they have document sharing, I have the feeling that they would also add an office suite, a cloud-based office suite to that, because they, you know, essentially Google Docs is, you know, what they would be competing with. And so that's easy enough for them to do. They have lots of engineers. They can buy or acquire an office suite. So how weird would that be? And do you think that's really conceivable that Facebook could actually end up getting into the office suite category and ultimately competing with Microsoft?
Oh, I think it is believable. I think that that is potentially what's going on. I think that it's definitely an obvious target for small business. You know, if you're not someone that wants to pay a lot of money or has a big IT department, but you all use Facebook, well, you know, why not just do your work there. I can see that maybe larger companies would have issues, especially because they have, you know, big legacy systems that they pay for. But, you know, larger companies like to save money too. And there's been this big trend called the consumerization of enterprise IT, which is basically people don't want to use crappy enterprise IT. They want to use the same kind of quality interfaces as they do in their personal lives.
Absolutely. And I keep hearing this phrase that Facebook wants to become an alternative internet that you never have to leave. And this definitely falls into that line of thinking. Hannah Kuchler is at FT.com and you can follow her on Twitter at Hannah Kuchler. Nice scoop, Hannah. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, just a sec. We're going to revisit the right to be forgotten. It's something we just can't forget, unfortunately. But first, I want to tell you about Citrix ShareFile. Of course, ShareFile is the secure way to send files to other people over email. You don't want to add an attachment. That's a terrible idea. That attachment gets duplicated to every single person on the mail systems of every single person you send it to, and you have no control over where it goes. So if you have any sort of financial sensitivity or any sort of information in the files that you're sending around, you don't want it to get in the hands of other people, don't add it as an attachment. Use ShareFile. That will enable you to upload it into a secure place in the cloud and send a link that only the person you sent it to can open it. They can download it and then open it. And then when they've downloaded it, you can be informed if you want to be. You can limit how many times it's downloaded, for how many days it can be downloaded, and so on. And you get total control over that file after you've sent it. It's the only way to send files over the internet, whether they're huge files, which of course, ShareFile can handle very easily. If they're secure files, which ShareFile will keep very, very secure, or they're just any file, it's super easy to use. It's the only way to send files. So you got to use Citrix ShareFile. Sign up today. We have a 30-day free trial. There's no obligation at all for this. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and enter TNT. And remember, just visit ShareFile.com and type in TNT. You got to try ShareFile. It's really awesome. Well, Lindsay, it looks like France wants to think locally and censor globally.
Yes. So this is very interesting. It's a little bit complicated, so follow along. A French court has implemented the EU right to be forgotten rule in a new way, and in such a way that the European rules can now be applied to try to force takedowns in countries outside the EU. And in this case, the court rule is fining a French Google subsidiary, so fining the French Google office 1,000 euros a day because of a defamatory piece of content that's posted from a link on Google.com. So in other words, they're punishing Google France for Google US not taking down a link that had been found to be defamatory by this court earlier. It's a pretty interesting situation because previously, in order to get something taken down in a specific country, and Google.com is considered to be the United States in this case, you actually had to issue the suit in that locality. So you'd have to bring the suit to courts in the U.S. And so this is a big change.
Just to frame this, we live in the United States, you and I, Lindsay. And just to frame this the most starkest possible terms, Google is an American company that exists to index what is actually on the internet. And a French judge is claiming the right to censor content on an American search engine for the American users of that search engine in a way that the U.S. government could never do. It's really an outrageous claim by them. And of course, the good news is $1,000 a day to Google is it's like literally nothing. I mean, that's not even lunch money for Sergey Brin.
It's very little. It's 1,000 euros a day. It might be some small way meaningful for the French office. And what seems particularly painful about this is that this court is sort of saying like, well, we're fining the French office. We're fining the local Google arm for something that's going on. And I think that there might be an argument to be made that, well, Google.com is where it's really at. That's where the by far the most traffic comes from. And they're sort of arguing that that if somebody is being defamed in France, it doesn't really help much to just take down the link in Google France. But it is a pretty crazy precedent to set, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the purpose of a search engine is to index what is actually on the internet, not to selectively index it in a way that benefits the people who are not happy about what's been actually posted on the actual internet. And of course, if France can claim the right to censor globally. So can China. So can Iran. So can Pakistan. So can North Korea. Anyone can. And what claim can Google possibly make that it's okay for France to assert, if they end up going along with this, it's okay for France to assert the right to enforce the right to be forgotten, and it's not okay for China to enforce its sensitivities about the Dalai Lama, about Tiananmen Square, about any of these sorts of things. This is an outrageous, outrageous thing, and I certainly hope Google doesn't go along with it. I would rather see Google exit France entirely than for them to set this precedent. This would be an absolute disaster, in my opinion. Now,
and Google has said, Google's response to it is very interesting. It's been a very mild response. I mean, it seems this has been going on since September. Presumably, they've now racked up, you know, $45,000 worth of fines, and it hasn't stopped yet. And their answer, their quote, is very mild, sort of, well, we're looking into it. We're consulting some experts, and they haven't really given any indication of what they're going to do with this, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. And just to give you a sense of how inaccurate the European version of the Google search engine has become, Google says they've gotten 168,000 requests that affect 572,000 URLs. Basically, 500,000 URLs are affected, or essentially in terms of requests. And Google's made... has actually affected those changes in 58% of those URLs. So this is a massive ongoing damage of the Google search index, making it inaccurate, that's taking place in Europe. And now, again, the French court wants to make it global. It's just, I just don't see this happening, and I certainly hope it doesn't happen. Well, tech companies, speaking of outrageous things, tech companies are banding together to support a Senate bill called the USA Freedom Act, which would limit the scope of NSA mass surveillance. The companies that signed the letter to the Senate supporting the bill include Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, Evernote, LinkedIn, and Dropbox. Julian Hadam is a reporter for The Hill, covered this story for that publication, and joins us now. Welcome to you, Julian.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Now, what changes would the USA Freedom Act bring about?
So the biggest one for the tech companies is that it would give them a lot more transparency and more ways to talk about the government demands of information that they have to hand over. Right now, there are a lot of restrictions on exactly how much they can say about what information they have to give to the NSA and the FBI. And the USA Freedom Act would expand that and give them more options to talk about the national security letters and what's called FISA orders and various means for the government to collect information. But also beyond that, it seeks to end the NSA's bulk metadata collection of Americans' phone records. And it also makes some changes to the federal surveillance court that monitors a lot of these NSA activities. And it's been really a big priority for the tech industry. And now that we're coming to the end of the year, it's one of the few things they really are trying to get done here in Washington before the year runs out and a new Congress starts over in January.
So we know how hard it is to get things through Congress right now. Do you have any sense for when this is going to come up for a vote and how it'll fare?
So it's been under negotiations for a number of months. There's actually a procedural vote scheduled for tomorrow afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, and it's really not totally sure what's going to happen right now. This is not the full passage vote. It's to overcome a filibuster, what's called cloture here in Washington speak. And for that vote, they need 60 votes to move forward. And it's, like I said, it's not totally clear what's going to happen. There's been opposition from both sides of the debate. The folks, defense hawks have said it would gut the NSA and make it too hard for the agency to connect the dots essentially between terrorists and handicap them and blind them, especially now that we've got this campaign against ISIS and, you know, these concerns about that threat, that is an attractive argument to some folks. But on the other side of the aisle, or the other side of the debate, rather, Rand Paul, for instance, who's a big civil libertarian and launched a class action suit against the NSA a couple months ago, he also said he's going to vote against the bill. He said that it's too weak in some respects because it extends certain USA Patriot Act provisions for a couple more years. And so really, there's this squeeze on both sides, both from people who think it's too strong and that it's not nearly strong enough. So that's really kind of put it up in peril. I've been talking to lobbyists and aides for the last couple of days, and a lot of them don't totally know whether or not it's going to pass. It's really coming down to the wire. And while there is bipartisan backing, both Democrats and Republicans have supported it, as has the Obama administration. Whether or not it actually moves forward, it still remains to be seen.
All right. Well, Julian Hatem writes for TheHill.com. You can follow him on Twitter, JN Hatem. Hatem with two T's in the middle. Thanks for joining us, Julian.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, Lizzie, it looks like an unexpected new partnership could end up combining music with transportation.
That's right. So you may have read about this on Friday from the New York Times, and it was confirmed this morning. Starting by the end of this week, you'll be able to launch your Spotify playlist as soon as you hop into an Uber. And this is going to launch in one of 10 cities around the world. Uber CEO and Spotify CEO announced the service on a conference call today. And they explained that this is, among other things, a great way for Spotify to get a purchase in the car. They're looking at ways to work on in-car integration. And this is, they think, a good start for them. It's pretty interesting because you'll just be able to control almost the entire experience once you step into that car.
It's got to be a nightmare for drivers. I mean, normally taxi drivers get to control what the music is or whatever's on the TV. And a driver that we had when I was living in Kenya was always watching TV while he was driving.
Oh, my God.
That was a lot of fun. But it's kind of, you know, you think, oh, people are going to be listening to this nice music. Well, some people listen to music that isn't going to be considered all that nice by the driver. It's essentially using the other person's car as a peripheral device to your phone. It's kind of weird, but kind of cool.
It is kind of weird. And actually, Business Insider has uncovered some really interesting conversations with drivers who are a couple of drivers are really concerned that their ratings could lower if the service doesn't work out in their favor. And there are a couple of scenarios that they're worried about. One is that while it hasn't really been documented how this works in the drivers' cars, it's through an auxiliary jack. So the idea is that the drivers plug their work phone, the phone that they run Uber service off of, using an aux jack into their dashboard. But older cars don't have this. And so some drivers are worried that they're not going to be able to provide the service and then their rating will go down as a result. And some drivers are worried about the situations that you sort of outlined, like what if somebody gets into my car and wants to turn up the volume so loudly, which apparently they'll be able to control or at least control the playlist from their own Uber app. They're worried that passenger will sort of assume that the experience can be whatever they think it should be and that might create dangerous driving situations for those drivers. So it's not all roses, although it does sound pretty cool as a passenger.
There's also a very real possibility that no one will use it. People have earbuds and can already control their own music. And it's like just kind of weird plugging in your stuff and subjecting your music to another human being. And also you have to be a Spotify user, right? So that you know, lots of people use Spotify, but still not everybody. I think the majority of people who ride in cars don't use Spotify. So, you know, there's a real good chance that this could just land with a thud and fail completely. Who knows?
We will see. 10 cities.
Yep.
Just 10 cities.
We will see. Target today launched an indoor map app for all of its 1,801 stores in the United States. The app enables shoppers to create shopping lists, then see whether those products are available in that store. So in a way, it's kind of like it's tied into the inventory database. So it's really a cool thing. It's not like a Google Maps or something like that. It doesn't give you turn-by-turn directions because Target doesn't have beacons installed inside their stores. It doesn't know where you are in the store, but you get a map of where the products are in the store. There's more bad news for this. The Android version only supports 40 stores. So the iOS version supports all the stores, and the Android version that supports all the stores isn't coming for some time. We don't know exactly why. Do you think people will use a map app like this, Lindsay? Will this take off and become standard for stores?
Maybe. I think that it really does need beacon integration to make it really work. Yep. What I want is for my phone to use voice directions to say, like, actually, the next item on your list, to tell me the order in which I should shop, right?
Yep.
Like, start in the toothpaste aisle and then, you know, move on to the dog food aisle and actually give me prompts based on the layout of the store. That's not here yet. I think it could be, you know, a handy list-making app, but you have to be pretty dedicated to Target to use an app like this. And I don't know, you know, if you happen to be watching the video version of this show, you'd see that the demo was happening on an iPad. The Target demo is happening on an iPad. That's a great way to show it, but I doubt many people are going to walk around a store holding an iPad, and that map is going to look a little less compelling on a small screen.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, there's got to be more. There has to be beacon support. Of course, Target is looking at beacons. Almost everybody, every major retailer is looking at beacons. And what that would enable you to do is you'd be able to have the sort of blinking lights where your products are based on your shopping list, if you were to do the whole thing that they want you to do. And then as you drive around, it would, you know, it could actually notify you that you're near the product you're looking for. The other cool thing about this app, though, is it knows what products are available in other stores. So a future version of this will enable you to actually order things that are in other stores for pickup or shipping or whatever it is. They could figure out other interesting ideas for that. But it's kind of cool to have the inventory of the database inventory. And of course, you don't have to be in the store to use that to find out if they actually have a product in stock. So that is a good benefit.
It seems like that's a good tool in the war against Amazon. The thing that I would be worried about if I were Target is this going to make shopping too efficient? We know that Target probably benefits from you wandering around a little bit, getting sucked down into, you know, the inventory on an aisle you weren't planning to visit. So I kind of wonder in the long term how this works out for retailer. If this is just sort of a step in making Target a more viable online choice for people.
Yeah, no, that's a great point because, you know, you can get, you know, we all know you can get really wrapped up into a screen and get all, you know, focused in on the app. And then all of your sort of like, you know, retailers like this really count on you discovering things you didn't expect to find there. And so, wow, I guess I need that. And just throw it in your cart and buying it. You know, it's impulse buys. That's why they have all that stuff at the register, because they know that, you know, you're about to buy it. It's right there. You might as well just grab it and throw it in with everything else. But if you're all, you know, your face in a screen, you might actually buy less.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Maybe you'll save money, but they will lose money. So we'll see how this turns out. Well, we've got some updates for you coming up. But first, I want to tell you about GoToAssist from Citrix. This is the product if you're supporting anyone. Of course, lots of people, you know, they're professional support people, of course, and they love Citrix GoToAssist. But they're also, if you have a small company or if you're the tech person in your company, you got to use Citrix GoToAssist because this is the greatest way to handle tech support problems because you can do it immediately. You can do it instantly. It's not waiting around for hours or days or whatever. You can just handle and solve problems very, very quickly. And of course, Citrix GoToAssist is the number one leader in remote support. So of course, the pros know all about GoToAssist. But I'm going to tell you some of the things you can do with it. You can screen share with employees. You can diagnose and fix their support problems with them collaboratively, with you having total control over their screen. And of course, you can do this from an iPhone or an iPad or an Android device. So, you know, even if you're off somewhere away from your desk, you can still solve these problems very, very quickly and easily. And one of the things that I like to remind people about remote support is that's a security issue. Essentially, you're enabling, by installing and enabling this kind of thing, you're also potentially enabling hackers to get in. But with Citrix GoToAssist, that ain't going to happen because this is Citrix. I mean, they really understand security. So this is the secure way to provide remote assistance. And so whether you're supporting one coworker or 10,000, you have to use Citrix GoToAssist because really, you don't want to waste time. You want to solve the problems fast. You want the user to be satisfied and get their problems fixed in a secure and timely manner. So Citrix GoToAssist will enable that to happen. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial. No contract, no credit card. Visit GoToAssist.com. Click on the Try It Free button and do it now because you really have to try this. It's this only way to provide remote support. Google found a Project Loon partner in Australia, the country's biggest telecom, which is called Telstra. If you recall, Project Loon is Google's initiative to use high-altitude mesh networking balloons to relay internet connectivity to remote areas, of which Australia has plenty. And Google announced plans to test 20 balloons across western Queensland starting in December. Google's ultimate goal is to lease balloons to the carriers, and Google has been testing the concept in the U.S. and in New Zealand for 2 years to mixed results so far. We'll see if they can really figure it out. Well, the U.S. State Department yesterday announced a breach of its computer systems, the fourth U.S. agency to announce such a breach in the last few weeks. The agency temporarily shut down its public websites and email system. Classified systems were not affected, according to the White House. And of course, the White House, the Post Office, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration were also hacked recently, and it's not clear whether the hacks are related. The White House hack appears to have originated in Russia, and the rest probably came from China. You see where I put this, Lindsay Turrentine? I put this near the end of the show. It's not a big deal. It's a, you know, the U.S. State Department was hacked, and it's just, you know, it's called breach fatigue, and we've all got it. It's like, okay, yeah, everything's getting hacked. Yeah, I know.
Don't share anything ever with anybody for any reason.
Just
we're just gonna write down all of our information from now on.
Yeah, absolutely. Dig a hole, jump in, and you'll be all right. China's one and only domestic bank card provider, which is called UnionPay, has made a deal with Apple for UnionPay customers to be able to buy things in the App Store. This is huge news for Apple because UnionPay is a huge company, more than 4.5 billion UnionPay cards have been issued to date. That's more than half the world's population. So apparently multiple people have multiple cards in China. China's already Apple's second largest market for app downloads, according to Eddie Q. The deal doesn't involve Apple Pay, which is Apple's solution for mobile payments authenticated with its Touch ID fingerprint reader. Apple still needs to get around Chinese regulatory barriers before Apple Pay can be used in China. But UnionPay was created 12 years ago and is shielded from competition by China's central bank. Meanwhile, poor Google. The Google App Play Store is still blocked in China.
Oh, that's rough. That gives Apple a huge advantage.
Enormous, enormous. And of course, you know, all those users in China who are using iPhones, it's just going to be a trivial thing to buy stuff. It's one tap to use UnionPay, your existing UnionPay card, to buy stuff in the App Store. So, yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, wow. And it does. That seems like the step before Apple Pay in China.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what it feels like to me. Like, let's see how this goes, and then we'll consider your...
That's absolutely true. Although even Chinese retailers have had trouble with this sort of thing. China's a little skittish about this kind of security. They want to make sure that they can monitor all these purchases, and so they'd have to figure out something with Apple. And those, I don't think there's going to be a deal anytime soon for Apple to use Apple Pay. Maybe a couple of years, probably. That's my own personal prediction, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime in the near future. Well, in other news, researchers at Queen Mary University of London have taught a computer how to create new magic tricks. They programmed a couple of existing magic tricks into the system and also plugged in information about how people get fooled by magic. And the artificial intelligence system was able to invent improvements on the tricks that could be used by magicians. One of the tricks was an old mind-reading card trick that involves the magician asking questions to narrow down the card selected by a volunteer. The computer was actually able to perform the same trick with one fewer question than the traditional method that's been used by thousands of magicians for many, many years. And so already it's improving magic.
Man, robots are going to take our jobs, and now... they're going to take jobs from magicians.
It's an outrage, I tell you, an outrage. Where does it end? Our TNT fan of the day is Derek Ha in Georgia near Atlanta, who watches the show via Apple TV on his big TV with his even bigger dog. Look at the size of that dog. That's a 47-inch TV, so by comparison, wow. Look at the size of that dog. That's a bigger than 47-inch dog.
Also an adorable dog.
Yeah. He's got a furry face. Yeah. Very nice. Was that a poodle? Do you know anything about dogs?
I think that might be a labradoodle.
Oh, okay.
It could be, or it could be a poodle.
All right. I'm sure the chat room and our audience will let us know one way or the other, our dog fans. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. That is the Tech News Today. Lindsay Turrentine, thank you so much for being our co-anchor today and every Monday.
You're welcome. It was fun.
All right. Always fun to have you on. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher or many other options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. You can follow us on Twitter. Tech News Today TV is our Twitter handle. Join our Google+ community. Just search Google+ for Tech News Today and you'll find the community. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. You can send it via email to TNT@twit.tv or call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.